From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
I and some of the Republicans in the legislature have introduced a bill to fund the MAP grants and also to fund our universities, and we've included a way to pay for it. So for MAP grants, I've said, let's pass procurement reform. That would save $500 million a year. That's much more money than we need for MAP grants. Let's do procurement reform, pass a MAP grant bill, and let's fund our MAP grants right now.
And as a result of the Blagojevich scandals, the legislature put in place and Governor Quinn signed legislation that put some new safeguards into the law in terms of how the state goes about procuring goods and services. We don't want to go back into an era where there were the kind of scandals that developed. I'm sure the Browner administration doesn't want to do that either. I thought the suggestion today that he wanted to bargain loosening purchasing rules and regulations in order for poor kids to get college funding was sort of a raw statement.
That's Steve Brown. He's a spokesman for the Illinois House Democrats. Before that, Governor Bruce Rauner. State finances and higher education in the state of Illinois, quite a mess at this point. We're going to talk about that and more on today's program. I'm Sean Crawford, and our panel today includes Charlie Wheeler. Charlie runs the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Also, Brian Mackey, IPR reporter. And in Chicago today, Amanda Vinicky, our State House Bureau Chief for Illinois Public Radio, and our guest reporter, Tony Arnold, with WBEZ Public Radio in Chicago. Tony, thanks for being on once again.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I'll throw it to you, Amanda and Tony. Exactly what the governor was talking about there. Did he change some position when it comes to these low-income tuition grants, also known as MAP grants in the state?
Well, clearly he's getting a lot of heat after having vetoed legislation that would have paid for the monetary assistance program. But he says, you know, what Democrats passed didn't have any money to back it up. And that's a position that he has long maintained. What is, I guess, in a sense different is he really said that it would take the procurement changes that he is seeking and that would be acceptable. Before, he's also said, you know, it paired with that some changes to state law that would give him more authority to manage, a.k.a. cut the budget elsewhere. But that, it appears, would be his. Perhaps, I mean, it's hard to tell because he hasn't spoken quite definitively about this, but that would maybe be what could get money flowing to universities and community colleges. So Republicans also have efforts.
You're
He's
talking about
MAP grants, procurement changes.
You're talking about those purchasing reforms.
Mm-hmm.
How do we have any idea what that could save higher education? Has there been any type of dollar figure thrown around with those?
You know, it's all, from what I have seen, it's grouped in with state purchasing as well as just universities. But, you know, we should point out many of us on this program, really all but Tony, are actually university employees. And it is something that you hear about as a frustration for professors, for administrators in trying to, you know, just do their jobs, the number of hoops that you need to go through in order to make a purchase. I mean, kind of basic stuff where the governor has said that it at one point took, you know, 4 to 6 weeks or so, and now it's taking 6 months to be able to go through all that Illinois requires. And so I guess that it is hard to fathom that procurement changes would bring about any sort of immediate savings that would allow Illinois to actually pay for MAP grants. But it's something that Rauner says needs to be done, and he's holding out the hope to do it.
Well, go ahead, Tony. Go ahead.
I think what I just add is that, you know, when you look at the overall picture here of state government, I feel like as this impasse has gone on for both the political reasons and the policy reasons, like it's just kind of the target's been kind of moving. It wasn't that long ago that whether child care centers should be getting funded or not, or at what levels they should be funded. Now that debate's over, the conversation's moved on to MAP grants, and that's kind of been the issue of the day here of okay, well, maybe we can work out a deal on something here to get MAP grants funded because universities have been picking up the tab while the state hasn't been funding it. And so this is like this is just where the conversation has moved to at this point.
Well, Rauner doesn't want to take the blame.
It occurs to me that the speaker's spokesman kind of sets up a false dichotomy. It's not a question of we have to go back to everything the way it was under Blagojevich. It's more, here's an area where there are additional costs to state government. And I think the $500 million refers not just to universities. It's overall state procurement. And that's a subject that for a lot of people their eyes glaze over. And I'm not sure anyone has actually seen a whole list of the changes that the governor thinks need to be made to the procurement rules. I'm sure it's very long. But to me, that's the kind of thing you sit down and you say, okay, well, we did this back because of Blagojevich. Is this really needed in this in the current atmosphere or what's to come? Well, yeah, maybe we need this one. But this one, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. You just go over them and put together a laundry list that everybody can agree on. These are changes that should be made to kind of streamline the process without removing the kind of safeguards that we found were necessary after a governor like Blagojevich.
And to be fair to the speaker spokesman, Steve Brown, there, we did edit, you know, some of his comments. He did say, you know, we could look at some of these things
Then,
I mean, so just for the purposes of concision. So
Okay. Well, if I maligned him, I apologize.
No, but
I'll probably hear about it.
Well, no. So I mean, I think that's a good point, though, Charlie. I think that there's so much. This is yet another example of something where there is so much distrust in state government. Mm-hmm. You got to imagine that Democrats are going to wonder, is the governor, what kind of anti-union poison pill will the governor slip into this legislation? Will he, you know, under the guise of saying, well, this is procurement change, suddenly make it so you can outsource all sorts of state services?
Well, that's why I say you sit down and negotiate. And it's not, you know, the governor likes to talk about these vague generalities, these sound bites. And as I've always told my students, you got to read the bill. So what you say is, okay, fine, that's what you want to do. Give me the legislation. Let me read the bill. And if there's something in there, aha, you're trying to sneak this in? No way. But if everything else passes muster, fine, I'm on board.
Let me ask, too, is it a situation here where the governor, you are battling public perception in some ways, and when you see kids not being able to get money to go to school, especially poor students, and maybe some schools having to do layoffs or cut back on classes, things like that, we've seen all of that. Brian, is this a situation where the governor is picking something so arcane? I think somebody mentioned earlier, makes your eyes glaze over to talk about purchasing reform. Does the average citizen, do they see that, you know, connection there saying, wait a minute, what are you talking about? Are purchasing reforms? Do these kids need money to go to school?
Yeah, well, far be it from me to guess what the average citizen thinks. But I think that you're right. I mean, you do set up on the one hand, we need to change purchasing rules for state government, right? And this is, I did an interview with our former colleague, Kurt Erickson, who used to, you know, he's a really kind of become an expert on procurement and really covered the heck out of that issue. And we talked about, you know, why is this important? But the fact is, I had to do a story with him about why this is important, right? Because a lot of people, as you said, their eyes glaze over. On the other hand, this is not just universities picking up the tabs for low-income college students. A lot of these students are going to be deeper in debt because of this action. We've heard, and it's not just state universities, Lewis University in Romeoville. I'd seen a memo from them that, you know, their students are going to be asked to make up for this. There was one student, there was a big news story late last semester. She couldn't actually get into air traffic controller school because she had this outstanding debt to the university over the MAP grant. So, I mean, this is something that it's actually beginning to affect a wider net of people. Of course, by definition, these are low-income students. They're not necessarily the people with the most clout who are giving the most money to politicians, if you want to take a very crass, cynical look at it that way. And so it's not, you know, I don't know that that's going to necessarily move people to act in the General Assembly, you know, for out of fear of angering their constituents.
And then this entire frustration here, you know, I mean, I think, first of all, this is a tough issue for Bruce Rauner. His critics would say, hey, he went to an Ivy League school and was able to pay for it. Clearly, he doesn't care enough about these poor kids. So that's where he's really trying to put the blame on Democrats. Democrats, I think you could say, are playing politics with this, too. I mean, let's be clear that the legislation they approved came months after universities had been crying out for some sort of action on this front. universities had also said that before funding MAP grants, that they would rather just have know their operating money. Maybe then they could cover the MAP grants, but they wanted to know what they were getting from the state. And in fact, the Democrats' legislation didn't include any money for four-year universities, just community colleges. And then to get back around to, you know, Charlie's point, okay, this is something, maybe procurement. All right, if that's what it's going to take, sit down, negotiate, have a deal. Instead, yet again, we aren't seeing any sort of leaders meetings. Neither side is going through and doing any of that. And that, to me, as you look at this whole budget situation and the turnaround agenda and really these monster disagreements, even on areas where there could potentially be some sort of compromise, you're not seeing any action from either side.
Well, Amanda, do you know the bill number of the legislation that the governor wants to change the procurement rules? Has that been filed yet?
That has been filed, I believe. Jim Durkin and Christine Redonio each have legislation. So, yeah, I don't have the bill number offhand. But you're not seeing any talks. That isn't going on. And that is where you have some speculation from people that think both sides want this pain to prolong in hopes that the other side will suffer when it come election day, that the finger will be pointed and the blame will go down on one side or the other. Yeah, either that or the distrust is so deep, or I don't know. But we aren't seeing movement.
In Chicago, at least, what I've seen, this one university, Chicago State University, and what's going on there has been getting a lot of attention here for a variety of reasons. The latest is that they're announcing that everyone's going to be laid off, layoff notices are going out, but the school isn't going to be closing. So I don't know exactly how that's going to work out yet, but the notices, I guess, are going out from the president on down. Meantime, you had presidential candidate Bernie Sanders having a rally there, criticizing, you know, the governor. This is now getting becoming on the national stage, what's going on at Chicago State. And Sanders's point was like, who goes to war with universities? Who picks that battle?
Well, so Tony, that gets back to the same point I was making earlier. It seems like this is not a great PR move for Governor Rauner to stand up and sort of say, I will demand this and I'll give something to universities if I get this. It doesn't seem like a good move on this one.
The governor actually addressed that pretty recently, and his answer is basically like, universities have way too much bureaucracy. And he designated some term that I can't exactly quote word for word, but the gist of it was, like, they have too many undersecretaries, assistants to the leader of stuff is basically what he said. And he just his comment was, generally speaking, it wasn't specific to any one university, but he has criticized specifically the quality of education at Chicago State. Obviously, you can imagine that Chicago State did not take kindly to that, and that's been this ongoing battle between Chicago State and the governor.
Well, and it's a hard thing for us. So how do you call universities bluff? Is it that they have enough money and that they are, you know, causing a ruckus because they want the state to come through? And this is, again, a negotiating point, a power position for them. Obviously, there are some universities that are able to withstand this more so than others. Mm-hmm. You look at, you know, the University of Illinois, where there are nonetheless consequences of not getting state funding. And they say at some point this is an issue, but they have, you know, endowment funds, foundations, private fundraising, and more students that are paying out-of-state tuition, or that, you know, a lot of students coming from Asia that pay a higher dollar amount to be able to attend school at the university. So I know I've gotten emails that say, hey, I'm on board with Rauner. I believe that there's too much bureaucracy there, that there are the presidents get paid too much, that they have too cushy of homes and other perks. And so there is, I think you're right, Sean, many people that would say, look at these poor students. They are suffering, as Brian said earlier, students going into debt, not being able to get their degrees, not being able to go on and fill positions because of all of this. And yet another side that sees it as, yeah, stand up, Bruce Rauner. Somebody needs to say no and eventually pull that, you know, plush rug out from under their feet and replace it maybe with tile.
Well, maybe what might be a good project for some enterprising reporters would be to sit down and actually analyze what are all the positions at the university, what are people being paid, what do people in the private sector with similar jobs get paid, are these duties absolutely essential? I would be willing to bet that one of the reasons there's been a growth in administration is because there are more reports that are being required of universities these days.
Harder procurement rules.
Well, just in general.
I'm not even kidding. Yeah.
You know, you have the federal oversight with all the federal rules and regulations, the new reporting on sexual assaults and harassment, the new safety training that people have to go for live shooters. There's a whole bunch of stuff that gets added on, and universities have to have somebody to manage it. I'm not defending it all, but I'm saying I would feel more confident talking about it if I actually had before me a position by position with salaries, and that stuff's available from the comptroller's office, and what the duties are. Now, is this something that's really essential, or can we let it go?
Well, and a lot of this is going to be the same sorts of, you can pick your things that you want to criticize, right? We've seen the governor's administration put out a memo criticizing the fact that universities hire lobbyists to lobby the General Assembly. Ironically, that letter came from the person who is essentially the governor's chief lobbyist.
Right.
So, I mean, you know,
so
on the one—
So much of it's in the eye of the beholder.
Right. This is where a lot of this, and so, you know, and they criticize the fact that the SIU administration uses, pays for an airplane to come up to Springfield to testify. Well, you know, I guess now the governor and the speaker and everyone is just driving around the state by car. And I mean, somebody could say, well, that's good. We should save the taxpayers money. Somebody else might say, is it really the best use of their time to sit in a car for 4 hours, one way on these trips where they should be, you know, having meetings and doing business instead of, sitting there reading the paper or whatever they're doing in the car?
Yeah, but the point I was trying to make is we get these anecdotal evidence, so to speak.
Right, right.
And I would just like to see the whole thing so you can look at it all and go through and prioritize.
Well, let's go back to the budget a little bit here, because it seems to me there's two things being talked about when it comes to higher education. We're talking about these MAP grants primarily, what we've been discussing here. And these go to the university basically to cover costs of tuition for a lot of kids who can't afford it. And then there's operational expenditure money that goes to the university to sort of pay for keeping the lights on and different things like that. Amanda, are you hearing any like that we may be looking at something that's more comprehensive, that lawmakers want to do that? Or are they just looking at this MAP grant money right now and saying, this is the most important thing, let's deal with it first? Are they going to break that out of the overall higher education discussion?
MAP grants are certainly what are getting the most attention at this point in time, with Chicago State University right now going through with these layoffs. I mean, there have been other pieces of legislation. There's one, for example, that you have two legislators, each of whom have primary opponents and are backed, it seems, by those with Rauner connections or the governor himself. So Chicago Democrat Ken Duncan and then Reggie Phillips, who represents Eastern Illinois University, they have a measure that the governor seemed to give a nod yes to or thumbs up to that would basically come up with $200 million for universities. It doesn't give a list, but those that need it the most, so CSU, Eastern, and it would take the money by basically erasing debt that the state owes itself. That previously, when Illinois had gone and dipped into special funds to help out with the last year budget, instead say, all right, we don't have to pay that back. That's where Rauner says the money, it isn't actual money, it's just kind of fidgeting around on spreadsheets, would come from. And Rauner said that would be acceptable to him. That's something that to some critics looks like a pre-election just Hail Mary attempt from Duncan and Phillips, and that people that are in support of these funds, these special funds, say, wait a second, we need that money. So there are various attempts. There's been other legislation that would try and get money to historically black universities. Again, that's really aimed at CSU, where there are more minority students, those who would, you know, schools where it would depend on more. So I think we're all just kind of waiting to see, but you're going to have a lot of legislators try and make an effort to come to the rescue. Whether there will be a deal is what is the great unknown.
I mean, this sort of thing, this idea, and one of these ideas is, you know, to give the governor this, I think you're they're talking about this power to not repay funds and kind of move money around state government. And somebody asked the governor at a news conference this week, one of these bills is called the Unbalanced Budget Response Act. So you have to ask yourself, this is sponsored by Republicans. They're asking Democrats, hey, remember that budget you passed? It was unbalanced. Now let's, you know, put that in statute. So is that a sincere effort to say, hey, let's work together to solve this problem. We want you to pass the Unbalanced Budget Response Act. You might as well just call it the Mike Madigan is terrible and has ruined Illinois Response Act or something like that for the, you know, for the effort to really try and solve the problem here that it appears to be.
I look at it as a fancy name for what the governor tried to do last year in terms of not making pension payments as required by law, in terms of not sending local governments their the money that they're entitled to under the revenue sharing income tax provisions. And that is one that I actually did read. And it gives unprecedented power to the governor, in essence, to take money from any fund as he sees fit, to override any statutory continuing appropriations, which would allow him not to make pension payments as is currently required. The only things that would be exempt, he could not take money that has to be set aside to pay off our bond obligations. And I think he also is limited in going into the road fund. But other than that, it's the kind of authority I can't imagine a legislature giving to a governor. Current personalities aside, just as a matter of separation of powers and the independence of the legislature, I can't imagine, as I say, any legislature anywhere giving that kind of authority over the budget to a governor.
Well, and what I would just add to that is this week, Rauner, in doing his press tour of the state, he was really pushed on his budget plan this year and why he didn't give details about what cuts he would make. And his answer ended up just kind of being like, well, I don't really have specifics, but you should look at the cuts that I proposed in last year's budget proposal that ended up obviously not going anywhere here in 8 months at least, and use that as like a map for what I would do this year if I have to make those same cuts. But it's again, Democrats aren't going to agree to that, so it's kind of like a moot point at this point.
Well, just a couple of minutes left here. I do want to bring up something else. Speaker Madigan, who was the top Democrat in the Illinois House, of course, he's having his battles with the Republican Governor Bruce Rauner, but also keeping his eye on a primary race in his district in Chicago. Tony, you've been following this. Give us the background on it, and does the speaker have anything to worry about?
Well, he's certainly taking it seriously, and I ended up talking to Steve Brown this week about that race because Madigan was endorsed by Chuy Garcia, Jesus Chuy Garcia, who's a Cook County commissioner here, and he ran for Chicago mayor last year against Rahm Emanuel and lost, but he took Emanuel pretty far into the process and forced the rundown, so a runoff election. So Garcia is pretty well known in Chicago. He did very well in that mayoral campaign in Latino areas of the city. And the speaker's home district, which is kind of on the southwest side of the city around Midway Airport, you know, it's heavily Latino. So it's pretty clear that he's going for that support. Now, he has three opponents, Madigan does. Two of those three opponents are not actively campaigning, but they are going to be on the ballot. And then there's this other candidate running the Democratic primary. His name is Jason Gonzalez. Rauner and Republicans claim that they don't have anything to do with him because he's running as a Democrat. But Gonzalez's campaign has been funded by some very wealthy people who have also supported Rauner. So lots of people are drawing that connection there. That said, this race has been, Steve Brown said this. Madigan's taking this seriously like he does every election, which is why you're seeing this endorsement from Garcia for Madigan. And I should just add that Garcia and Madigan aren't exactly the same breed of Democrat, but so it was kind of a surprise that Garcia publicly endorsed him. But at the same time, they're basically he basically said, well, Madigan's doing important work in fighting against Rauner, and that's why I support him.
Is there some belief though that Governor Rauner is involved in this as well? At least that's according to what Speaker Madigan and some of the rumor mill we've heard that he believes that.
Yeah, there is, and Steve Brown certainly drew that connection also, and just said, you know, there might not be a clear point A to point B, but it certainly looks like there is. Gonzalez denies it. Gonzalez also has brought up dirty politics, and there was some toe lane signs that were put up outside of his district office this week. They got taken down a few hours later after
this
the
is
press
what it's come
it
to.
Up. But this is basically, yeah, if you can't park in front of the district office, then you're going to get towed away, basically. So, you know, this is something else that's, I guess it's part of Chicago politics maybe, but Gonzalez is certainly getting a lot of attention for a state representative race, and a race that really Madigan hasn't had a serious contender in quite some time, or really had to fight for his own reelection in I don't know, recent memory.
Well, it's time now for our notes from the field. Amanda, let me start with you.
Well, I will say that, first of all, we had a poll from the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute and give us some clues as to how the presidential race could fare in Illinois, which, depending on how things go, could really be in play. As Tony noted, Bernie Sanders was in town this week in Chicago, and we also saw him open a bunch of campaign offices throughout the state. Hillary Clinton making a big push in Chicago as well. Guess who's ahead? Donald Trump with 28, Cruz came in at 15%, Rubio 14. Clinton, however, far and away was leading Sanders at the time of the SIU poll with at 52% and Sanders at 32.
Tony Arnold?
I think I'd just say that, you know, all of us who watch state politics and state government have been watching the race between the Democratic primary between Ken Duncan, a Chicago Democrat, and his opponent, challenger, Juliana Stratton. I went to a debate between the two, and you know, this race is like the most expensive race for state representative maybe ever in Illinois. And this debate, it was so poorly attended for all the millions of dollars that have been spent on this race. Almost there were only a couple dozen people in the crowd. So that's what I did.
Brian Mackey.
Yeah, the Illinois Times has been doing, the alternative weekly newspaper here in Springfield has been doing some reporting on trying to get at the governor's emails, and they FOIA'd that, and whether the governor has a cell phone, and we're told there are no responsive documents. They couldn't even figure out if the governor had an email address. So this week, that reporter, Bruce Rushton, went to an appearance by the governor and asked him, you know, do you have an email? And the governor said no. And he said it's been sort of freeing for him, he found. He's now meeting more people face-to-face. He made a little quip about using some newly invented technology called a pen and paper and said that, you know, emails just cause a lot of trouble. They get leaked. You have spam. And he just wanted to, you know, to avoid that. And, you know, obviously some overtones with the Hillary Clinton scandal there. So I guess the governor do not try to email him. He does have a state cell phone and said he didn't understand why a FOIA request for any records related that would have been non-responsive. So there may be some more information coming out of this yet.
And Amanda, I think you reported as well that, of course, Speaker Madigan doesn't use email. At least claims he doesn't either, right?
Exactly. He's sort of notorious for being old school and in that regard. No email, and I believe also no cell phone.
And I know that she'll kill me for this, but I sort of agree with both of them. I think it could be more advantageous not to have it. Shirley Wheeler, we've got about 30 seconds here.
Well, we were talking about the plight of the universities, and it's been noticed on a national level, too. Moody's Investor Service, which rates the creditworthiness of institutions attempting to borrow money, has downgraded Eastern Illinois University to junk bond status and also downgraded Northeastern Illinois and Northern Illinois. Their credit ratings were lowered to just above junk bond status. And so that's kind of a harbinger of the things to come.
All right. Well, that will do it for today's State Week in Review. Our guests include the WBEZ reporter, Tony Arnold, and also our panel, Shirley Wheeler, Amanda Vinicky, and Brian Mackey. You can get a podcast of this show by going to wuis.org. The production assistance for our program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.